STL Soccer Talk is brought to you by Closets by Design. Update your closet, garage, office, pantry, and more. Imagine your home totally organized with Closets by Design. Call 1-800-BY-DESIGN. That's 1-800-BY-DESIGN.
Greetings and welcome to STL Soccer Talk, the soccer podcast of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch and STLtoday.com. I'm Tom Timmerman. After however many weeks of the season. Well, match day 34 is coming up, but I think it's like match day 38 maybe when you look at, you know, buys, you know, off weeks and things like that in there. Because I think they just handed out Player of the Week 37 earlier this week.
But you're Tom Timmerman.
I'm Tom Timmerman. Yeah, that's right. I'm Tom Timmerman. And you're Beth O'Malley.
I am.
We used to be checking IDs at the door, but now I just let you come in and assume that you are, in fact.
Well, you hesitated before you said your name, and I was going to remind you.
Not having a stroke or something. I got distracted by the thought of whatever. I'm now distracted by other thoughts, and I've forgotten the thoughts I was distracted by.
Let's turn to last Saturday's game.
You know, a lot going on in that game. For a team that's been eliminated from the playoffs and is not going anywhere. Houston, a team that was fighting for home field in the first round. A lot going on there, and there ended up being even more going on there than we thought. It was not just the intrigue of the game. As I wrote, there was, you know, City players were mad at Houston players. Houston players were mad at City players. City players were mad at City players. City players were mad with the coach.
I mean, there was anger all over the field.
You and I got along perfectly.
We did.
I think in the press room, everybody was in a delightful mood after the game. We all got along great.
But certainly,
during our long wait, because it was a long wait. It turns out the players were outside enjoying fireworks.
Well, and fair play. Like, they deserved to enjoy the fireworks. They definitely played their behinds off during that game, and that led to a lot of high emotions. And you could see it. I mean, the fans got into it as well. They were booing
Escobar,
the Houston player who ended up getting a double yellow and so the red. Every time he touched the ball, they would start to boo, which is always one of those things that's fun to see fans get that into it. But I think it only heightened some of the emotions that were happening on the field. City players have said, and they say it every time they play at home, that the crowd feeds the team. And that was certainly true, I think, at this game. And the team has also said, players have said, their goal, okay, we can't make the playoffs, but we can win these last home games. And except for one, they've succeeded. Right?
Yeah. was it Berkey after the game who said we knew Escobar was going to get a second yellow?
Right. We didn't have to help him there. We knew he was going to get there. Sure enough, he did.
And actually, because he almost got one right after he got the first one. And
yeah.
It was something. But just ill will. And it's really unusual to see a guy actually kind of behave like as – I would say jerky, but as ill-mannered as he did when you're on a yellow card, because then you have to, like, you know, improve your behavior. But he did not do it.
He was not improving his behavior.
His behavior did not improve.
And certainly City players were doing their best. I mean, you can see exactly what Berkey was talking about. City players were not holding back. Even after a foul was called, there was a lot of the positioning in front of the free kick and things like that that you see people do to annoy the other team. And it was working.
And there was a lot of going down. There was the number of tumbles taken after kick, the number of people grasping their ankles in pain was significant.
Simon Becher, I think, definitely has one of the best falls on the team at the moment.
He's averaging being fouled twice a game, which is the highest on the team, and I got to look at where he stands in the league.
He definitely on that. Falls, and I'm not saying flops. He falls more than that a game, for sure.
Yeah. And it, you know, genetics being what they are, who knows how his ankles are, you know?
It's, well, clearly they're very painful at first.
A layer, thin layer of skin over a bone. And so if you've been hurt there once, then they hurt again.
It's painful for sure. But he hops right back up once.
Yeah, yeah. I think we can recall Nico Giochini last season going down. Boy, an awful lot.
And I think Betcher definitely gives him a run for his money. And there's a reason for it. Yeah. I mean, if you draw a foul, you can get your team in a really good position, especially at different parts of the field. And certainly you go down to draw attention to a foul.
Yeah, because that's something, at last, it's how the game works, is that if the guy kicks you in the shins or whatever and you keep running, I don't know, 75% of the time, there will not be a foul call. Sometimes they'll play advantage and they'll bring it back, or sometimes if it's egregious, you'll get a delayed yellow card on it. But yeah, if you stay on your feet, which you're certainly capable of doing in many of these cases, you know, but you've been fouled. We saw it with Celio Pompeo getting a penalty kick earlier in the season, where there's a hard tackle, which was in the box but was not penalized. Then he gets up and creates a scoring chance, but then he looked back and said, you know, that first one was a foul. He just got up.
Right.
And a lot of times you don't see that. So, but we want to talk about the emotions of the game. We're getting emotional
Well,
now,
I mean, those were some of the emotions of the game. You know, you have players going down. You have the other team standing up, practically standing over them, or you have a city player standing over them. Mm-hmm. I'm sure exchanging polite words about the validity of, of them being on the field.
Yeah. Berkey's dash is the most memorable. Not really a dash. He ran at a good, at a decent clip, but he wasn't like sprinting.
I wouldn't say it was a jog, but it wasn't a sprint.
He was running with purpose to get up there.
And have a stern conversation with several teammates.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, a conversation with Toyard, and then Leuven and he crossed paths and exchanged what appeared to be more unpleasant terms. though they then made up for it at the start of the second half.
They gave each other a hug, yeah.
So, but, yeah, and there was just, yeah, after every foul, there was a confrontation, and Berkey's point was, look, they're doing quick restarts, we're being exposed, we can't do that.
Right.
So forget about it and get on with the game. And I wonder, and it was the second time this season that City's had a game officiated by a woman.
Mm-hmm.
And you wonder if that plays into this. I mean, Houston is always a pesky team that does a lot of this fouling and slowing things down. But you wonder if just it's a different referee.
It is a different referee, and I wonder if the players on the field react to the gender differently than they would a male referee. After the game, I noticed there were several Houston players who came over to the referee, and she was very clearly telling them, get away from me. I mean, she was doing the, I'm gonna show Tom how this looks, but she was like raising her hands and then flapping her fingers at them upside down, like shooing them. And I don't, you see players talk to male referees after games, but not quite in the same way. And maybe as a woman, I was reading into it. As a woman, you don't necessarily like to be in a crowd of men who aren't happy with you. There's a different feeling to that. There was a point when I said to you, I'm a little worried she's going to lose control of this game. But she seemed to gather it back in hand. I think Berkey coming out to talk to his teammates helped the temperature, at least among City players, a little bit. And Houston, you know, they were clearly getting very frustrated and frustrating City players. So facing that type of game this late in the season with a team that has no postseason chance is a little interesting.
Yeah. The referee today, Tori Penso, is the only woman on the main roster of MLS officials. And the only other time City had a female official this year was during the League's Cup, where they had Ekaterina Korolyova, who is an NWSL official, and who has been like a fourth official in MLS games, but had never been a center official. So you had that. You had obviously the teams just going at it. It looked like there was going to be we were expecting. I don't know about you were expecting there to be like a brawl.
If it were a hockey game, there would have been like 10 fights.
Yeah,
I mean, let's be honest. If there were, if it were a hockey game, the referees would have had their hands full in stopping fights left and right. Mm-hmm. And there was one point, I think it was Toyshirt, got into a bit of a shoving match over the touchline next to the goal. Mm-hmm. But that was about as physical as it got among the players. I think at a certain point, players were like, this is not worth the red card, because that's what would happen.
Yeah, because you get a red card there, your season is over. Yeah. You don't get to play in the last game. Yeah, and it's one of those cases where if there had been a hard foul in the 93rd minute or something, that then maybe things blow out of there. But it didn't happen.
Right.
That there was not a big foul late. And, in fact, there was like a celebration late when City went up 3-0. So, and maybe it's because it was at 2-0 and Houston still think, wait, we still got a chance.
It's still possible. It's still possible.
Let's not, you know.
Right.
Go down a man. And
well, I can't remember exactly when the second yellow came for Escobar, but that certainly seemed to change the emotions on the pitch. Yeah. Like, oh, we all got to step back. Mm-hmm. So
So City, we should talk, and then we need to talk about Klaus. Klaus comes out in the 69th minute, I want to say, and has some words with John Hackworth, leaves the field, goes into the dressing room, presumably, then comes back out a few minutes later, has some more words with Hackworth, gets kind of a pat on the back.
There was clearly some kind of, like, we're all good here, shaking hands.
Assistant coach Mitch Hillebrand's kind of, you know,
right.
Pat, you know, he's standing in between, or sitting in between them, watching the game, kind of, you know, okay, you know. Anyway, and I asked Hackworth about it after the game, and he said, it wasn't that he didn't want to come out because he was pretty tired, but he came over and said, yeah, I've been playing the six instead of the nine, been playing defensive midfield instead of striker the whole game. Do you want me to keep doing that? And Hackworth was like, you did a great job. You did what we needed to do. I'm sure we'll talk about more of those later. Let's win this game, and then we can meet me in my office, you know, next week.
And we talk about this during the video. Klaus did well. The problem is that nothing he did really shows up on an individual stat line. He's playing well. He's contributing to the game in a lot of different ways, defensively and offensively. He's just not recording the assists, and clearly he's not recording the goals he wants to be scoring, especially after last year and his frustration earlier this year. So I think he's dealing with a lot of different emotions. He's back playing on the field. He's playing with really good players who are getting goals, and he's not seeing kind of the rewards of that in his own goals.
Yeah, he hasn't scored a goal since the Chicago game on, what is that, May the 11th was the last time he scored. So he's gone, you know, 15 or so games since he last scored. And so he's certainly got to be, he's got to be aware of that, because he's scoring goals is what he does.
Well, and he plays a position where the first thing you ask is how many,
how many goals did you score?
And without that stat, it's very difficult to sell yourself as a striker.
Yeah. You know, in the seven games he's played since he's come back, he's had a total of six shots, only one of them on goal. And he doesn't have an assist. But, yeah, you look at these games and
– I mean, I can think of at least one goal. He fumbled the ball a bit, but Toyer picked it up. Mm-hmm. Made a cross, and there was the goal. So, like, if Klaus hadn't made a run, hadn't received a pass and slowed up the game, these types of things that he does, that he was doing before, it just, he was scoring before, and now he's not, because the players around him are. And, that would be a frustrating position.
Yeah, because now you've got Betcher, and you've got Toyer, and you've got Hartle, which are three big offensive weapons, and then you got Klaus, and Klaus is an offensive weapon, too. These other guys are really hot right now, and just the way it is set up, in that Klaus is creating spaces. He is, you know, with runs off the ball, has opened up spots.
He's drawing defenders to himself because he is a threat.
Yeah, and maybe that is going to flip, and maybe soon they'll be following Betcher or Hartle or Toyert, and it'll leave him positioned to do something. Right now it hasn't, And so you can see where that frustration for him comes from. Though, you know, they they're very happy with what he's doing.
Which is something else that he may just have to get used to. Okay, yeah. This is where they want me to play. This is how they want me to play. I'll get the goals as they come. And you have to flip your mindset. And I can see how he hasn't had quite the time this season to get comfortable with that.
Imagine your home totally organized. Closets by Design is offering 40% off plus an additional 15% and free installation. Schedule your free consultation today. Call 1-800-BY-DESIGN for details. That's 1-800-BY-DESIGN.
Yeah. I shall say they didn't have their regular defensive midfielder, Chris Durkin, in the lineup. He's still out with a inflamed knee. And while Akil Watts was in that position, I think Klaus brought more of a presence to that role. I would like to we have to watch the tape. How many actual touches of the ball Akil Watts had? I don't know that there were that many for a guy who played pretty much a full game. And sometimes you can defensively have a very good game and not touch the ball if, you know, you're denying opportunities and whatever. But, you know, Klaus kind of moved into that role.
And Klaus has always been kind of a defensive-minded forward.
That's what they've always loved about him, that he was a striker who was willing to come all the way back.
And do that fairly well for somebody kind of, I guess, playing out of position. When they talk about the press starting at the defense or with the forwards, that's exactly what they're talking about.
Yeah. So I think I've mentioned this before, but earlier in the season, very early in the season, I had someone with the club say, but, you know, maybe he would get more goals if he didn't drop all the way back. If you're a striker, maybe being, you know, further forward and not expending the energy to run back and go from end line, you know, not just box to box, he's end line to end line.
And but with the other players they have on the field now, you don't have that problem. I think maybe earlier in the season you were having that problem because there was no other dedicated striker. It was just Klaus.
Yeah.
And they've changed their format since then. They've changed the lineup.
And this was a game where they went with two strikers. They started both Klaus and Simon Betcher, which was only the second time they did this, as they look at situations. The other one was the Minnesota game, which they had chances but didn't score them. And this time they've had chances and did score them.
This time it worked out really well. But clearly Klaus and the team probably have some adjusting to do to that format and what it practically looks like on the field as they're playing.
So remains to be seen what happens.
Yeah, there's not much time this season to see how that's going to go.
One more game, and they'll have a scrimmage this weekend on the bye week or the off week. But, yeah, and then they'll have a full game next week to close out the season. We should also say in closing out the season, and you talked about this, the emotional goal for Jake Nerwinski.
Yeah.
And 92nd minute, and Marcel Hartl crosses, and Thorsson lets the ball go, and there's Jake Nerwinski, and, you know, knocks it in from not too far out. And and ecstasy breaks loose at City Park.
I think the entire bench ran down to him in the corner.
Yeah, and guys would come out. Klaus, Leuven, Nielsen, who had come out of the game, all make a beeline to Jake Nerwinski to join in the celebration.
And Ben Lunt was basically playing the drums on Nerwinski's head. Yeah. It was really heartwarming to see the players support Nerwinski like that. He's been very vocal and was, again, after the game about his difficult season. And he dropped something that I – you know, was a little surprised at. He said the team has not yet talked to him about his contract. And maybe there's a philosophy of, oh, let's wait for the season to be over. Let's focus on the season. And then we can turn to other things. But they were talking to Parker about his contract far earlier in the season.
Yeah. You know, the club has an option on him, so they can exercise that. But, you know, is probably on the first day of September. If you'd said to me, you know, who's not back next year? I said, well, clearly Jake Nerwinski is not back next year, because at that point in time, he had played 7 games, one of which was in the Champions League. Two of those games, he played stoppage time. He was barely played. Three starts, you know, off the bench for a smattering of minutes and others. And it was clear this was not a guy that fit in their plans. You know, Thomas Todlund is the right back. And I still don't know how much he's going to be in their plans. I don't know the terms of the option, what it says for if there's a dollar amount
right.
attached to it, you know, because he's not one of the highest paid guys on the team, but he's still slightly above.
He's not minimum wage.
He's not a minimum wage guy.
MLS minimum wage. None of these guys are making minimum wage, but MLS minimum wage.
Yeah, and it's funny because in MLS there are like multiple minimum wages.
Yeah.
There's a supplemental roster. Or there's a regular roster minimum wage. But he's making $277,000, which is more than a lot of guys. But you know, it's this about the same as what Rasmus Alm is making. It's mm-hmm. a little more than what Nukvi Thorason is making. You know, it's more than Josh Yarrow is making. It's, you know, but it's four times what Jose Kojima is making, and they've been using Jose Kojima as a right back with City 2.
Mm-hmm.
And so you wonder if, well, they're thinking, look, Kojima's coming back, and
yeah.
and is that a option at right back that saves you $200,000 a year, which you can spend towards something else.
Saves you money and brings a younger player up onto the main team, which, you know, definitely Fanensteel has shown an interest in doing and developing younger players.
Yeah, and I think, I'll double check this while I talk, but that Nowinski is the second oldest field player after Joachim Nielsen.
Mm-hmm. And last year, that they needed those experienced MLS players to help other players who had never played in the MLS. I mean, that's mm-hmm. kind of one of Parker's benefits last year was he knew MLS, and he was able to say, you guys, the travel is going to be nonstop. We have mm-hmm. to be prepared for anything and everything. Mm-hmm. MLS going to MLS.
Yeah.
And now that the players have seen that, most of them in person, is that experience as vital to the roster?
You know, the top five in age for City SC right now, Roman Berkey, who's 33, then Joachim Nielsen, Jake Nowinski. Well, Nielsen's 30, then Jake Nowinski, Josh Yarrow, Rasmus Alm, and Ben Lunt are all 29.
Mm-hmm.
So not really old, I mean, but you know, the older members of the team. And I should look this up. Is I wonder, after Nowinski, who on this team has played the most MLS games? It could well be Chris Durkin.
Yeah, we should. Durkin has some.
Who's only 24,
right.
but who has been in the league for many seasons because he started young.
How many seasons have Kessler been in the league?
Oh,
to test your memory.
Five or six. So
okay.
Kessler's probably.
He might be
probably up there.
Yeah, I mean, so many of these players. Our German, I forget which game it was that you were laughing about. Like, we had an all German goal.
Yeah. Horn to Hartl to, you know, to Teuer. And Klaus, who's not German but has played in Germany and, you know,
has that experience.
There's a German feel to many.
A few weeks ago, I was at McGurk's before the game, and there were some City fans there wearing the jersey, and then wearing Lederhosen with the jersey, which I thought was so on brand. It was great.
It is.
And they probably were going to like an Oktoberfest beforehand. I didn't ask them why they were wearing the Lederhosen. It's not something you usually see mm-hmm. people wear.
No.
But
I hardly ever wear mine.
It would be an ideal outfit for a City game.
It would.
Do you, wait, you own, let's go back. You own Lederhosen?
No, I don't. I was just joking. Sorry. Not to damage my credibility.
We were about to go on a whole tangent.
A whole different tangent than you want. By the way, between now and the next game, Celio Pompeo's got a birthday coming up on October the 12th.
Oh, okay.
So he'll turn 25 on that one. And then John Klein on November the 7th. So I've got my age page in front of me on my on my tablet right now. So while I have that information handy. and actually Jake Nowinski's birthday coming up actually on the 17th. So he's about to graduate into the class of 30-year-olds. Nowinski is a guy they're going to have to make a decision. And I would have said, no way, Jake Nowinski is coming back.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there's a chance, you know, because the way he's played and because Hackworth likes him, he's played more in the less than half a season under Hackworth than he did in the more than half season under Bradley Carnell.
Yeah.
And you know, they like Nowinski's defensive play. They like Totland's offensive play. And so that's how they're going to, you know, they have to decide what they're going to do with that. Is Kojima an alternative there, or mm-hmm. do they need to have someone else? But would they rather get someone who's going to be a backup?
Right.
Do you want to, how much do you want to be spending on that guy? Or is there a world in which they're playing Todd Lind and Nerwinski, you know,
as needed,
17 games apiece?
Right.
You know?
Right. And which, yeah, you could see that happening, but do you see that happening with a $200,000 player?
Yeah.
As you were just saying. And Kojima has shown a lot of versatility. We know he can play a lot of different positions. So just because they've been playing him in one with City 2, I mean, he could clearly come up and play a different position. But there is a familiarity with that position. And the team asks a lot of those wingers. So
yeah. It's funny. They announced the candidates for league awards mm-hmm. on Monday. And it's candidates. It's teams can nominate their own players. And you go from there. And each team can nominate no more than two in each position. And so can every team, if you've got anyone who's got a remote chance, you know, you put that name forward just so you can, if nothing else, say that
right.
About them. And Thomas Todland is City's nominee on the Defender of the Year ballot, which I found humorous because the one thing they've said about Todland is his defending needs to get better. When we need defending, we play Jake Nerwinski. So if you look at Defender of the Year from a, you know, an attacking,
right.
you know, from a, the various things a defender is called upon to do, his position is defender, but he's a good attacking defender rather than a defending defender, though he's gotten better at defending defender. So
what? Nothing. I'm just a defending defender, and then we can say an offensive offender, yes. which no, has other – you, no, you don't really want to say that.
Say that one. You said other award candidates – Berkey is their candidate for MVP. Mm-hmm. Not going to get that. Mm-mm. He's a candidate for, obviously, Goalkeeper of the Year, an award he won last year.
I don't think he's going to get it this year.
I don't think so either. I think when you have a team with the record that City SC has, that, yeah, you're not going to win. Some of his numbers, his goals saved above expected, are kind of close to what they were last year.
Mm-hmm.
But when a team is 8, 12, and 13, has had as few clean sheets as they've had, they've had so many four goal games. But you look at his play, I mean, if you just, you know, if you put together the highlight reel of Roman Berkey's saves this year versus last year, they'd look a lot alike. I mean, he's made some yeah. really good saves. He had them Saturday against Houston.
He had them Saturday against Houston just after you were like, neither goalie has made a save. Berkey proceeds to make, I think, five or six really good saves.
He ended, yeah.
One of them was really helped out by some luck as a yeah. Houston player ran basically into the post instead of into the ball. Which is all they needed to do to score.
To score, yeah. But you know what? You know, you make your own luck. And he certainly, I mean, he was going one way, stuck out his right leg and or left leg and caught it with that and it bounced away. And he ended up a shutout, but Houston ended up with a expected goal total of 2.5.
That's pretty
high.
So
that was a plus 2.5 game for Berkey, which is a lot.
Yes.
And, you know, to get a shutout on a game like that is a significant thing. You know, because a lot of times the shutout is the product of the whole defense. It's, mm-hmm. you know, the goalie gets the clean sheet stat on his record. But it's the defense as a whole. We talked about the well-placed settee last week. And this was a case where Berkey...
The defense did well. Berkey saved that game.
Yeah. So Berkey's the MVP and goalkeeper candidate. Mm-hmm. Newcomer of the Year, both Hartle and Toyert are nominees there. They both have done really well.
I think they might have a better chance than the other two that we mentioned.
Short periods of time. Hartle's played 8 games. Toyard's played 9.
But when you look at the goals and the assists produced between the two of them,
mm-hmm.
Pretty impressive.
Yeah, the goal contributions by both of them are pretty good. You know, this week, Simon Betcher and Marcel Hartle both made the first team of the match week.
Mm-hmm.
City. And I looked, and didn't have to look very far because it's in my notes, but Hartle has played 8 games this season for City. And for 4 of them, he's made either the first or second team on the team of the match day.
Mm-hmm.
So 4 of his 8 games have been good enough where he was one of the best players in the whole league
right.
in those games. And, you know, if you were just the third best, you didn't make the team that week. But where he was one of the top two guys, you know, out of 29 teams, he was, you know, there. So the impact he has made
right.
Has been pretty impressive in the early going. And the same for Toyert and the same for Betcher in a slightly reduced role because he had some games where he didn't start.
Yeah.
As I said to John Ackworth afterwards, isn't it great when you – put a guy back in the starting lineup after a few games off, and he scores 2 goals. He said, coaches love it when they make you look good like that. Because, yeah, Simon Betcher had 3 games on the bench when Rasmus Alm came back
mm-hmm.
and then went out there and scored a bunch of goals. And they've actually going to have decisions to make
right.
you know, as to how this is all going to work
yeah.
going forward. Because – you know, Indiana Vasilev is now reduced to coming off the bench, and he's been one of their better, you know, guys all year, you know, offensively. So I should also say Jake Nowinski's goal, the 20th player to score on the team this year, which is a league record
mm-hmm.
for players on a roster to have scored. And they've got, I think, 9 guys with 1 goal.
Okay.
Of
yeah.
which Jake Nowinski is one, and, you know, Nielsen, Yarrow, Kessler, a lot of defensive guys. Jubilo Blum, who's not with us anymore.
I mean, you get the defenders who score on like a corner or a set piece.
Yeah.
Where all of the players yeah. are there in the box. Yeah.
yeah. But meanwhile, their leading scorer has only 5 goals. That you've got, Toyert and Leuven and Klaus at 5 goals, which is, I have to look, may well be the lowest high in the league for a team's leading scorer.
I think last year the team had a pretty, not 20, but it had a pretty long list of goal scorers.
I was meaning to look that up to how many guys scored goals because it was big last year. Now, if you're saying, can they get to 21? It'll be tough because there's not many guys left
who haven't scored
goals.
Let's see. Yeah. I sit here as if I'm gonna pull this out of the top of my head.
Go for
no,
it.
There's no way.
Go for it.
There's no way.
No, come on,
I'm not gonna be able to
try.
Do it.
Or we'll let our listeners at home ask the question.
I think Nielsen has scored.
Nielsen scored. He had the bicycle kick. It was
kick.
A goal of the week.
That was
goal.
A great one. Yeah. Has Yarrow mm-hmm. scored?
Josh Yarrow scored a goal. Yes.
Yeah.
And of course, we're not counting like Roman Berkey.
Has Watts scored?
Is who?
Watts.
Yes, I believe Akil Watts has scored a goal.
Okay. See, now I'm just running out of names as
yeah.
well as players.
So Jake Grudwood-Reich hasn't scored a goal.
Okay. Well, yeah. Horn hasn't scored a goal.
Horn hasn't scored a goal. And there's one other, and let me, Chris Durkin's got a goal. Klaus, Leuven, let me see if it is, I'm on the forward section of the book now. He's got a goal.
Tom is paging frantically.
I would say I'm keeping fairly calm, in fact.
You are, but you know.
Jose Kojima hasn't scored a goal, but he's probably not going to be in the lineup.
He scored, but it was in non-MLS play.
Actually, no, you were correct. Akil Watts has not scored a goal, so I think
yes.
so. He would be. Those are the 3 that okay. have a chance to be in the lineup on Saturday against Minnesota who have not scored a goal. Wait, I think his. Hang on, I got one more. I got to look up, but I'm pretty sure it was 3. Yeah, and Kyle Hebert is not. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's great.
Okay.
And these guys that scored goals in the past, so. Remains
you know,
to be
right.
seen. But anyway, so getting a 21 will be difficult unless something odd happens where, well, it wouldn't be
It's not impossible, but I mean, it would be, they don't play in positions. They haven't shown a propensity for goal scoring.
It's not like there's a forward or attacking mid. It's not like Nukvi Thorsson has not scored a goal.
It feels like.
It feels like Nukvi Thorsson has not scored a goal.
I feel bad. I do feel a little bit like I'm picking on him, but yeah, I find it frustrating to watch.
And Nukvi is among the league leaders in expected goals not scored. if you take his expected goal total and subtract his goal total, he's in the top 10. But so is Klaus, and Klaus is above him for expected goals not scored.
Which shows how frustrating of a year both of them really have had in a lot of ways.
Yeah, and Thorsson is a guy that you keep thinking he's – is it going to happen? And
he disappoints you.
Yeah, but he let the ball go so that Derwinski got the chance. He could have
missed. Yeah. I'm so mean.
Yes. What else do we need to say? I'm looking at the list. I don't know if we've talked about this in weeks past, but the roster decisions they're going to have to make. And Nerwinski is one of them.
Right, yeah.
And there's only one guy who is out of contract, totally out of contract with no option. That's Josh Yarrow.
Mm-hmm.
And that's going to be a toss-up because he makes the senior minimum. So it's not like you're going to replace him with someone cheaper.
Right.
Because he doesn't make much to begin with, $89,000. Obviously, he's a leader for a guy that doesn't play much, a leader within the team.
Yeah.
For young guys and old guys, he is the team's nominee for the Impact Player Award for the person for his community work, which he has done a lot of both here and back home in Ghana.
Yes.
I mean, you know, I think I've said this before, but I occasionally tag along when they do charitable things, and Josh is, you know, had more of those than anybody else. And I was talking to Jose Kojima at one, and I said, do you learn from going to these things with Josh? Because Josh is just a natural at these things. He said, yes, I'm trying to emulate what Josh does when he goes out in the community, because that's the guy Josh is.
He's very warm. We had him on the podcast, and he was great.
Yeah.
You know, you kind of hate to see any of these players go, but has he gotten to a point where he can get a better contract somewhere else? That's the other question. I'm not sure.
Yeah. It remains to be seen. And does he want to stay? I mean, he's married to someone from St. Louis who works in St. Louis. Would he be, you know, his first choice to stay around?
Right.
You know, or to be involved with the club in some other way? So, because that's, you know, because Josh Yarrow is a valuable resource. And that's why he has been with the team so long, because when they were putting together the team, you need guys like Josh Yarrow.
Right.
We'll see. Jaden Reed, you know, they've got an option on him. Ben Lunt, they got an option on him. He's a backup goalie who they are very confident in what he could do.
Yeah.
So.
And you need that, especially if Berkey gets hurt mid-game, we saw that this year. And, you know, having somebody like Ben Lunt, we had him on the podcast, and the other players have talked about how supportive he is and what a personality and character he is. Mm-hmm. And that's always fun for a roster to have.
Yeah. It used to be in FIFA international competitions where you'd have a 21 or 23-man roster, but you could only suit up like 18 on a game day. And so teams would always bring, like to the 1990 World Cup in Italy, you would bring three goalies because in case of emergency, or one gets hurt, you need to then have a backup to the backup. And Dave Vannoli, who I actually went to college with, was the number three goalie for the U.S. And the thing was, when you had to choose who you were going to suit up on game day, the third goalie was instantly not a candidate. There was no way you were suiting up three. And so Dave sat on the bench or in the dugouts that they had in Italy then with an American flag and sat there and waved the flag and yelled and cheered.
Does he still get, if If the U.S. team had, you know, won a medal, would he have gotten a medal, the whole roster?
Yeah, he'd have gotten it. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. Dave was a good guy. He's no longer with us, but Dave was a great guy.
I think you'd almost have to be a good guy to be in that type of position.
Yeah.
You know, here I am. I'm going to practice as hard as you are,
mm-hmm.
and then not even get the benefit of wearing the jersey on the sub line.
Yeah,
but
yeah, Jose Kojima, they'll certainly pick up his option.
Right,
Akil Watts, again, Hackworth loves him.
And with Bloom out, you have to have somebody who can step into that role, as evidenced these last few weeks.
Mm-hmm. And then John Klein and Michael Venzel,
mm-hmm.
Who have first team contracts, but who play more with City 2 than they do with the first team. And that would probably be the case next season as well.
Probably, yeah. There's just not room for some of these players, frankly.
Yeah. But do you not pick up Klein's option and then sign him to a City 2 contract?
And then you have to, like, heaven forbid something happens mid-season, can you even, I guess you can bring him back up. And would he be content with that?
Yeah.
You know, all of these players have agents who are searching for something else.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And Venzel, you know, said this before, I mean, I think he's a center back of the future.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and with the uncertainty about Joachim Nielsen's situation, Michael Venzel is kind of bringing along, and do they now think he's ready to be, or just a regular backup? And because if you have Josh Yarrow, you know, he's a center back.
Mm-hmm.
You got Kyle Hebert, who they're also big on.
Right.
So, you know, but if you have to have some sort of roster churn, you just can't pick up everybody's thing.
Right.
And those are the people that you can move at the end of this season.
Speaking of roster churn, there's an expansion draft. Does the team make those decisions before the expansion draft? Like, what's that timeline?
Yeah. I guess technically the contracts, I don't know the end date on them, if it's December 31 or what, or when the season ends on December 10th or whenever MLS Cup is.
Mm-hmm.
Because the expansion draft will be a week after the game is over.
Okay.
So, you know, at that point, you know, if you pick up Josh Yarrow's contract, but you're then leaving him exposed in the expansion draft, which, you know, okay, if that's the guy you're going to lose, that's okay. You can live with that.
Right.
So they're decisions, and we should probably maybe next week we can talk about the expansion draft and put together our list of 12 guys, who we would save on this team, because you have to make interesting decisions, and some of it is who you think is you'd like to keep, but also you think is not going to get drafted.
Right, and there's people that you have to put on the list because of the contract or their designation on the roster, so that further complicates it.
Yeah. City's going to miss the playoffs by, right now they're 9 points out.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's not like they're that close. They would have had to win 3 more games over the course of the season. Certainly, and wins.
Right.
Losses that were wins, or that we would have had to have, pick up 9 points, 5 ties that were wins. Now, certainly you can make the case there are 5 ties that could have been wins along the way.
I think, yeah.
But
definitely.
And if they'd beaten Minnesota, they'd be 6 points out.
Mm-hmm.
But because Portland is now the last team that they're catching.
Right.
So they still would have been not quite there. So it was a team that's had its chances. We've got another week to talk about this.
We do.
Tuesday afternoon is the draft, as it were, of MLS Next Pro playoff opponents.
Mm-hmm.
We'll know who City 2 has chosen to play, or if they're adventurous or not adventurous, and who they will play.
If they go for the sure bet, well, as sure of a bet as these things can be.
And we should say, on a City 2 note, an MLS Next Pro record crowd of 12,022, I think, on Sunday for their game against Tacoma, which they won 5-0.
That would have been a fun game to be at.
Yeah, so City 2 remains nobody. Nobody in MLS Next Pro gets crowds that are even, I would say half, but are even 3/4 or even 90%, you know, 10% of that. I mean, most of these crowds in Next Pro are, I mean, they don't announce them because they don't want to say before 90 people or whatever. And so some of these crowds get. And City gets 12,000.
Yeah.
And you have to work to get that. It's not just like they're opening the doors and they are going for that market and they're trying to get kids and to say, come to a, you can't get to a City SC game because they're all sold out.
Or the City SC game is $75 to $90 a ticket or far more.
Yeah. Who wants, if you've got five kids, whatever.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah.
So come to the cheaper game. It's still a great atmosphere. You still get to see clearly good soccer, or at least on our side, good soccer.
You got to see John Klein and Michael. You got to see a bunch of first team guys.
And you get to still experience this beautiful stadium. So,
And which is why one of the things they want to do, and it's why they want to have Open Cup games, because that's another way that tickets are readily available for, because they're starting from scratch. If you want to come to see a game at City Park. I was looking at, and we need to wrap this up, but I was looking at the league attendance numbers, because the league announced that they first time it hit 11 million for fans overall. And some of that is because this year, with a full season of Messi, and because Messi played some games in football stadiums.
Right.
And so teams that normally would have attracted 20,000 were now attracting 50,000.
Right.
Or 70,000. So some big crowds for that, and that boosted their overall attendance. But City last year was 10th overall in attendance. And this year, with the exact same number of fans, because they sold out all 17 home dates, they've dropped to 12th in attendance. But it's the same number. Their attendance was affected. It was just that other teams
had the other stadiums sold more tickets.
Sold more tickets. Vancouver passed them. Orlando passed them. So it's interesting how that numbers. But, yeah,
well,
17
then
sellouts.
The ownership definitely built a smaller stadium than I think some people were expecting, because they didn't want to have those empty seats. They wanted to have a full house. Mm-hmm. And it's a bet kind of on selling those season tickets and sustaining the interest in the team. And, so far, it's been all right.
And it's a supply and demand issue. When it drives demand for it, because it is a finite object. And if they'd built like Nashville and had a 30,000-seat stadium,
Early could still fill it.
Sell out.
They'd probably still have sellouts. Mm-hmm. But would they be able to fill it 5-7 years from now?
Yeah.
Especially if the team continues at this season's level of play and not last season's level of play.
Yeah.
That's the bigger question.
Yeah. Yeah. And right now you would think next season would look more like last season than this season, or at least the beginning of this season.
Because we're optimists.
Yes. That's this podcast noted. For its optimism.
Very.
We should say it was a farewell to the inaugural City SC jersey.
Yes.
That was the last time that uniform will be worn. I think they'll wear it this Saturday in their scrimmage.
It's the last time they'll wear it at home during an MLS game.
An MLS game will be seen in public. And certainly.
But we're still going to see it in public a lot.
It'll be seen in public because so many people bought them.
Exactly.
But you will not see it on the field. Right. At games.
But it's another opportunity, I think, for some of the players to end up on the top-selling jersey list.
Yeah, very well could be the case. It'll be the same color, but the design will be different. They like the color.
Quote, unquote, city red.
Yes.
Pink.
So that'll be... it'll
be fuchsia.
So the color will be there, but the design will be different.
Right.
So that will... And that, I'm sure that will be unveiled. MLS uniforms go on a two-year cycle, and so City's home jersey, this is the end of its second year. And then the inaugural road jersey did one year.
Right.
And then they started into a two-year.
With the fingerprint jersey.
The Confluence jersey, yes. But it looks as though checking for fingerprints.
Yes.
And we've got the jersey handy.
But we will talk about
That.
So many more things next week.
Next week.
Thank you all for joining us.
Same bat time, same bat channel. But yes, next week. Yes, thank you. And look for stuff in print and support local journalism. Subscribe to the podcast. Give it good reviews. Tell a friend. Tell everyone. Tell even people that you're mildly friendly with. They don't have to be close friends. Tell anyone who says, I wish I knew more. Hey, there's a podcast.
It's very relatable.
Yes. Anyway, on that note, for Beth, for Allie Shallard, our producer, for me, Tom Timmerman, until next week, be seeing you.